listening to a broadcast of Homeschool How To's, and this is your host, Renee Ellison. We'd like to invite you to visit our website, Homeschool How To's. When you type that in, there are no dashes and no apostrophes. Just type in Homeschool How To's and have yourself a good look at all the many helps we have available for you. I think there's over 100 of them, and they're very inexpensive. We just want to serve you and give you little tips, all condensed and easily read, so that you don't have to go through years and years of research to find out the best ways to do things. Well, today's topic is why homeschool? You know, people homeschool for many different reasons, not the least of which is to minimize their children's responses, exposures to public tragedies like the Columbine and Sandy shootings. But there are other reasons, many of them. And today we want to stack up all those reasons, looking at each one, examining them all together, to give you a strong vision for what you're doing when you homeschool. Some parents toy with the idea of starting to homeschool, but they give up, either for fear of what friends and families will say, or because they're just not all that convinced that homeschooling is really any better than the way their children are currently being educated. And some veteran homeschoolers have grown tired, wondering if homeschooling really is worth all the trouble. So a look at the benefits all stacked up at once may buttress your resolve in a brand new way. So let's take a fresh look at what homeschooling does for your child, spiritually, academically, and socially. And then we can consider what it does for you as the parent. So we'll start off now with spiritually. What is the aim? What's the goal? What are you going to receive spiritually for your child by picking this route as opposed to the public school route? Well, first of all, we want to look at what is a child. They're not just a thing that arrives in your home to sort of get through life, but they're actually godly seed. And this godly seed is so important that the devil has historically tried to snuff it out, even right away at the beginning of time when Adam and Eve had their two children. Cain slew Abel. And some believe that that was the devil, because the devil thought that the Christ child would come through Abel, and he wanted to snuff out that godly line. And we see that happen over and over in history when Herod wanted to kill all the little babies. And at other times in history, we see the same thing, a vicious assault upon little babies. And of course, abortion is the current strategy he uses to just snuff out this godly line. So your child is very, very important to God. He's very important to the universe, the big story that's going on in the universe. And God has specifically given you the task of raising godly seed. And this is so important. It's not the job of the state. It's not the job of daycare centers. It's the job of parents that God gave to parents, knowing that their children are eternal beings whose character will matter greatly, not only in this life, but also in the next life. So these parents who homeschool seriously, take it on really seriously, believe that these are training days for reigning days. And that word reigning is like a king reigning. It's spelled R-E-I-G-N, not like rain, water. So these are training days for reigning days. That's what all this is about. And they see that down the road, their careful, thorough training will yield glorious results. They'll issue in wise, stable, secure, mature adults destined for leadership in this world and the next. Homeschoolers don't view this work casually or as an afterthought, but they pursue it with prayerful deliberateness. It'll take everything you have. They seek to cultivate a love for God and an obedience to God in response to being made and redeemed by God. And we all know that that's not in the public sector's set of goals at all for your child. In fact, they've kicked God out of the schools. They've kicked the Ten Commandments out. They've kicked any mention of him out of school. So we have a diametrically opposed long-range goal of cultivating in our children an actual love for God and an obedience to him. So what does this mean for history, let's say, for teaching history? Well, it means that they're teaching history as his story, from start to finish. It's not just random acts in a random universe. There's thought to this history, and so we put that context around the study of history for our children when we homeschool. And it means that we help our children locate daily paths of righteousness, and that's going to be new and different every day. And they're going to need some guidance in what those paths of righteousness are all about. And that cannot be trained as well by peers or by the state. Homeschooling parents seek to shape their children's character, not only put them in a large context of history, explaining all that to them, but shaping their individual character. And they do this by inspiration and by discipline, putting the thing into actual reality, in the actual execution of each trait. They might take loyalty for one day, or follow through for one day, or let's do our work with excellence for another day. Let's work on your cheerful countenance today. All these kinds of character development are really focused upon by the homeschool parent. It's not just getting them through academics. So these parents help their children remain steadfast in their devotion to Christ while skirting the temptations that the devil provides for a child every day. So homeschooling parents believe that children are primarily the parents' responsibility, not the daycare and not the state. And this is a radical shift in the thinking of parents in our culture. We've been raised in a culture that has said, no, it's someone else's duty and responsibility. And when we look at scripture, we have to take that back. No, it's primarily the parents' responsibility. Others can lend their aid, but the sole weight of it is on the parent's shoulder, and that is as it should be. God designed it that way. He gave children to parents. So these parents believe that the responsibility continues well past the age of 5 as well. You know, many parents think, well, just get them through daycare, get them into kindergarten, and then our job is done. Tisk, tisk. We're off to our careers. We're off to another agenda. But it's the child is barely formed by the age of 5. And now some very serious thinkers are thinking that you shepherd your child until they go down that marriage aisle to the altar, that the job isn't really completed until then. And then as careful as we've been before, we want to back off and let them now have accountability for their own lives. And we can lend our wisdom, but it's not the careful oversight that we give as they're growing up. And finally, homeschooling parents believe that children, for the most part, do not make good missionaries. Most youth follow the pack instead of discipling and converting the whole classroom. You'll find that they descend into copying the culture instead. So the long and short of it is that homeschooling parents seek to separate their children from those who are rushing headlong into public agendas curriculum. Now let's look at that curriculum. What is the public agenda? Well, if you go into classrooms today, often you see that they're absorbed with last month's media crisis. What's coming across the media, the TV, the news? And you'll see large posters and lots of occupation with trendy things, homosexual agendas and that kind of thing, begin to absorb more and more of the school day rather than teaching skills and academics so that they have the tools to parse the culture later on. But right now, they hit kindergartners with this stuff. Something else that's in their agenda is peer cloning. We want everyone to be exactly alike. Egalitarianism is the big name for that. Let's have everybody be on the same page. And as you know, God designed children wonderfully different, with different skills, different mental aptitudes. And so egalitarianism is not the Christian's goal. It's uniqueness. It's how they fit in God's overall scheme of things. The tulip is very different from the oak tree, for example. So what's another thing in the public school's agenda? Well, they saturate the children with an increasing level of perverseness. And as a result, the children grow inoculated against all kinds of rebellion against authority, cultural mores and morals all get slipped into your child's psyche through this constant exposure to the world's ways of doing things. They train toe-to-toe authority challenges, actually. All the violence that we see in the inner city, in the ghettos, in schools has been fostered from childhood. You are the ultimate measure of everything. So if you want to take on an authority, even with your gun or your knife in school, go right ahead. We've trained this in through acceptance of more and more deviant challenges to authority. In the public schools curriculum, we get exaggerated preoccupation with holidays. Christmas time can take up a whole month in a public school with lots of sugar and candy and diminished academic requirements. And pretty soon it's just soup. And that same time could be spent with vigorous mental discipline that is squandered and wasted in lots of holiday trivia. For each holiday, doesn't matter if it's Valentine's Day or Halloween or what, begins to absorb a lot of the school curriculum. Another thing the public agenda hoists upon children is a common background. It's shared even outside of school in our culture by existential TV viewing, causing everyone's childhood to be exactly like everyone else's. They all know the Walt Disney stories, for example. Well, in the olden days, it wasn't like that. Every childhood was different. Some were at sea, some were pioneers. And when they got together, their backgrounds were shared and delighted in. It wasn't this vigorous cloning for everyone to think exactly alike. Testing is another thing that is foisted upon children in schools, and they get labeled early. And what virtue is it to label your child in the pigeon group of reading or the bluebird group of reading? Is that what education would be like in heaven? Or would they just grow? You know, given their great diversity, would they go from point A to point B? Without the labeling, what virtue is there in labeling and making a child feel terrible about himself against other peers? Pigeonholing. Also, there's just a total lack of life skills that are happening in public school curriculums. They're absorbed in so much academics that they don't know how to change a tire on a car, for example, or fix an evening meal. All these life skills that used to just be built in to a child's history and his background and his childhood are vanishing. Kids go to the refrigerator and they think the food grew in the refrigerator. In the olden days, they used to milk the goats and collect the eggs. Well, we've lost something here. The public school's curriculum is numbness to life skills. And the last thing is deadness to God. No mention of God. They don't want any mention of God. They don't want the universe to be in some sort of well-ordered, established matrix. They're purposely deadening the children to God. No excitement or praise of God or sense of wonder that God made science like this. God made leaves in patterns. God made me and made all my body systems. It's taught in a vacuum. Here's anatomy. With no sort of why about life. They're taught the what of life, but the why of life is so often missing, increasingly missing. So that's all. That's all the difference between the public school's agenda and what you're going to do at home. It would be like, well, let's see, like the Jews giving their children to the Egyptians to educate before the Exodus. So that's a look at the spiritual benefits of homeschooling. Let's look now at some of the academic benefits. Well, homeschooling parents believe that tutoring is the shortest distance between two points. Historically, it has been the education of choice for royal families, future military generals, composers, and other leaders. You know, Mozart's father hauled him all over Europe to play his little concerts, and he taught him in the carriage history and Latin and the other subjects so that the boy could be working in both domains at once. Tutoring is just very flexible, very adaptable to the child's true skills. Instead of plowing through curriculum with homeschooling, we teach for mastery. That is, you don't turn the page until the child has mastered the content of that page. So in the public school, you plow through curriculum, and some kids don't get it, and the gifted kids are bored. But when you homeschool, you're teaching for mastery. That's a huge difference. You don't cover the book, you cover the child. That's a huge difference. Grades are not necessary in the homeschooling system. It'd be rather like grading the growth of, you know, a rose bush. Whatever would that be for? Tutoring enables one to cover lots of material faster and deeper without wasting time forming lines and taking recess breaks and head counts and waiting upon endless administrative interruptions that are coming into the classrooms through the loudspeakers. It's just quicker. You know, in a kindergarten class, if you timed how much time it takes to get all those boots on 25 children's feet before going out to recess, it's simply mind-boggling how much time is taken up with this, with the logistics of just moving herds of children. You know, one time there was a father who was a doctor, and he had to take a trip to Europe, and so he asked his son, who was in first grade, he asked the teacher, he said, could I take my child to Europe? Can I just get the textbooks to cover what you're going to cover while my child is absent while we go to Europe? And the teacher said yes and loaded him up with the textbooks. Well, the father discovered in Europe that he could cover the entire day's work in 15 minutes. So per day. So when he got home, he really took a serious look at homeschooling as a legitimate option from having to spend so much time herding masses of kids. So tutoring provides a quiet environment in which to cultivate a long attention span too, and it allows for developing complex thought patterns, something that's just denied entirely by current flashing techniques used by the media to overpower and control your child and used in the classrooms. We're going to work on this, and then we're going to quickly switch to another subject and another subject and another subject. And so the child, if he's attentive and if he's deeply in thought, is truncated in that thought because of the need to teach the masses. So the world thrusts at us information outside of a context and outside of a settled, quiet ability to cultivate a long attention span. And they call this an education. So there are many additional pedagogical benefits to homeschoolers. One, the tutor knows the strengths and weaknesses of the child very well, so there's no slipping through the cracks for weeks at a time. I had a mother come up to me one time, and she was in a gymnastic class with me, and our two children were there, and she said she sadly discovered at the end of first grade that her child didn't know the alphabet. And I thought, well, woman, what happened with the letter A back in September? If you were on it, you would have known the child didn't know A yet and then progress to B and C. It's possible to fall through the cracks for months on end when you're in a mass education situation. And number two, the teacher can focus on developing excellence in all that is undertaken. They can say, you know, I can't read your paper. Let's rewrite this. They can look at where the child is sloppy in their math, and so their addition doesn't add up because they're adding in random columns. They can't see them straight, and so the parents can straighten all that out. Well, we'll come back. We're going to stop for a break now, and we'll come back with several more academic advantages to homeschooling. So now we'll take a quick break from this program of homeschool how-tos, and when we resume, we'll go to the next points.
You're listening to Homeschool How-Tos with your host, Renee Ellison.
Okay, hello everyone again. We were talking about the academic advantages of homeschooling. We had covered the spiritual advantages, and now we are diving deeply into this area of the academic advantages. Maybe some of you didn't know, but most of the forefathers of our country were homeschooled, and the royalty of England was largely homeschooled throughout history. They just knew that they wanted to hover over everything that happened to their child if they were raising them for royalty. And so they would teach them history and fencing, etc., with tutors. They didn't want mass education for their children because their children were destined for a different end. And how much more are our children who are being raised for royal, spiritual royalty, now and in the coming kingdom, need this kind of oversight, this kind of careful tutoring? And often politicians, they will, as much as they trumpet the value of public school, you watch what they actually do. They put their children in private schools or tutoring situations, knowing that it is somehow an advantage. Okay, so we've discussed some of the academic reasons. We were on point number three now, that the instructor transfers his or her own contagious lifetime love of learning to the student. You have a fighting chance at doing that. You know, most teachers are burned out in public schools when they have 25, 30, 35 kids, and they've done it year after year. I know one teacher, she spent about 30 years teaching just fifth graders. Well, that woman was just going through the ropes. There was no new spice or spunk, and there was no excitement of education being caught by those students. There was nothing to be contagious to. So the instructor's own enthusiasm will go be transferred to the student. And we all teach best what are our passions. So even though you get a curriculum or some way that you're going to pursue your homeschooling, when you get down to those topics you really love yourself or those skill areas that you're really good at, you're going to teach with a lot of passion. And that's simply just denied in the majority of public education. The fourth point now is that there's time available for pursuing greater other goals. There's just more time to do it, to pursue music, athletic challenges, life skills, domestic skills, carpentry skills. Little boys should be baptized in four areas: plumbing, electrician, work, mechanics, and carpentry. Why not grow inch by inch, day after day with those? And little girls can be trained in domestic skills, sewing. They can be advanced tailors by the time they get out of high school if you've incrementally grown these skills. They can put on banquets for large numbers of people. We knew a little 10-year-old who, we went to her house, she was one of 12 children, and she'd have her hand on her hip with her big spoon, and she'd say, "I add this seasoning to my spaghetti sauce, and I do this," and she stood up on a little stool, and she was stirring a big vat of huge spaghetti sauce to feed a multitude, and thought nothing of it. And of course, there can be cross-training. The little girls can study in the boys' areas, and the boys can study in the girls' areas, just for exposure and appreciation for their spouses someday, and for times when they'll actually need those skills. So it's tremendous that you have all afternoon to develop these other abilities, to say nothing of entrepreneurial endeavors. And you know, as the economy continues to collapse, we're going to have to spark entrepreneurial endeavors to even swim through this economic collapse that's coming. So you want to start that early. We know of a little boy who ran an orchard at 12 years of age, and he would deliver the apples in his little cart, and he would do the spreadsheets for his accounting and bill the customers and do the marketing. And all of this is possible. We can have high standards for where to take our children when we have these kinds of blocks of time that are just not available when we give them to the public and the state to educate. When you add on to that 2 hours of a bus ride, an hour there and an hour back, you really take away the stomach out of the time of childhood. We know a family, they spent the night with us, and the mother had those kids up at 5 a.m, feeding them breakfast because they had to get on a bus at 6 to get to school. Now, what adult wants to eat breakfast at 5 a.m? Those poor children. The system began to whip them into all kinds of gyrations to accomplish what by the end of the day? Really what? Was it that much better? Was it the same, or was it actually worse? Shalom for this week, and don't forget to visit our website at www.homeschoolhowtos.com. See you again next week.